and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today on the show, we're going to talk a little about harvest safety. We would also be happy to discuss anything that's happening on your farm or answer any of your questions. If you want to call us here, the number is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, agphdmedia, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a second, where we answer your questions. Before we do, just to kick things off on this harvest safety thing, the number one thing that I would say is go slow when you're in the country. So if you're driving a vehicle that can go what I would call full speed, 55 miles an hour or more, you got to slow down when you see these slow-moving vehicles. And this is one of the things that I learned as a young driver. My dad just said, hey, do you know what the rule is when you come up behind a slow-moving vehicle? You know, one with the triangle on the back? And I said, no, what's the rule? And he goes, well, you're supposed to slow down to the speed of that before you can pass. You have to slow down to the speed of that vehicle. Even if it's going 10 miles an hour, that's the speed you have to slow down to. Then you can proceed around them. You don't get to go just flying 55 miles an hour around that person. So I learned that when I was a very young farmer on the farm. And the other big thing I would say, on the other end of it, as the tractor driver, this is another thing that you got to think about all the time. Our dad always taught us, hey, you do not drive on the shoulder, ever. Don't drive on the shoulder. You drive down the road in your lane. Once you drive on the shoulder, you've given up your rights to the road. And let's say there's anything that causes you to swerve back into the road, that accident would then be your fault. Just drive down the lane. You're probably only going to be on the highway for a mile or 2 miles or 3 miles. It's no big deal. It's just what people have to deal with out in the countryside. We have to recognize that farmers have to take farm vehicles down the road. And so that's just what we were always taught. And that's what we would tell farmers today, tell everyone today, drive down your own lane. And you know what? If you're a car or a pickup coming up behind a slow-moving vehicle, just slow down to the speed of that vehicle. You're going to get the opportunity to pass them real soon. All right, right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
First question comes from Gary in Nebraska, and he said, howdy, Brian and Darren. You talk about putting fertilizer down into the soil 8 to 10 inches. I'm wondering a couple of things. I've got sandy and I've got clay soils. Would you prefer to use dry or liquid? Is one better than the other in either of those types of soils if I'm going to put it deep?
What we usually will talk to people about is dry is pretty nice if we want to build a soil. So let's say we're at 2% base saturation K and we're trying to either in one shot or over time build it up to 4% base saturation K. And it's going to require whatever, let's call it 500 pounds of K out there. Well, it's going to be a lot less expensive to just to build it with dry. With the liquid, we love liquid in the fact that, I mean, especially some of these low salt products, because it's available right now. It is already in the form that the plant can absorb. It doesn't have to mix with water or anything else like you would find. I mean, let me rephrase that. It doesn't have to dissolve in water like the dry products do. So we look at liquid more as feeding the plant. We look at dry as building the soil. So it all depends on what you're trying to do. If you're just putting a little bit out there to help feed the crop just this year and you're not putting on a super high rate or anything, liquid's a real good choice. But if you say, nope, I'm all for building my soil, then I'd probably go dry. On our farm, just so you know, we use a combination of liquid and dry. We're always running some liquid with the planter. Sometimes we'll do it with strip till if we're running lower rates, especially if we're doing it in the spring. Then we're definitely running liquid. In the fall, either broadcast, anytime we're building a soil, deep banded with the strip till machine, then we're running dry.
All right, thanks for the question. Got this one from Colton. He said, I'm a chemical sales retailer in Southern Illinois. I really enjoyed your episode you had on foliar fungicides. Studied weed control in college, but really hadn't worked with foliar fungicides. But after working with a number of my growers this year with foliar fungicides and soybeans, we ran several trials, and I'm a full believer. During our trials, we saw anywhere from a 7 to 9 bushel increase over the non-treated areas. Look at that picture that he sent, Brian. It's noticeable from the air. And he said, we also had a grower that did a double shot where he put some out at R1 and also at R3, where most of the guys just did it at R3. Wondering if you've seen response with double application of fungicides at different growth stages, if you'd recommend that, or if you think that R3 is going to give us the best gains.
If you're just trying to do one shot, then R3 is usually a pretty good time. I usually say late R2, early R3. That's what we've found over the years. But there are some diseases. Let's take sclerotinia white mold, for example. That's where you got to go 2 shots, and you got to start earlier. Like right at first flower is when you got to be going after that. Now, the other thing that I'll say is it depends on the disease pressure. It depends on the year. So the last couple of years here in our region, we had the 2 wettest years ever recorded in 130 years of weather history. So when you're going to have super wet years, odds are extremely high that disease is going to be quite abundant. Now, and by the way, for us, record rainfall is 35 inches in a year, 36. So maybe 40, depends on who you want to talk to. But right in that range, 35 to 40 inches. And the reason why I bring that up is because, where did you say he was from, Darren?
Southern Illinois.
Exactly. I thought it was Illinois. I hated to say it. But in Illinois, that's what you get every year. So anyway, my point is, these last couple of years, we saw a really good response going 2 shots. But you always have to be looking at cost, and you always have to be looking at ROI. So that's where, during our fungicide show, I was just saying, look, you know, with the early shot, we're out there spraying something else anyway. We're spending $5, $8, maybe 10. But if you're going late and you have to call in a plane or helicopter, it's a completely separate trip, and you have to run the full rate, well, now you've got to have a lot more yield gain. So the only time we usually recommend that second application is either in a white mold situation or when we go, ooh, we've got chance for record yield here and also probably chance for record disease. So, and you can also look at, is it a tolerant variety or is it a susceptible variety to certain diseases that are in your area? So I'd kind of weigh all those things out. We'll talk a little about harvest safety coming up next on Ag PhD Radio.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to effective herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Burnmaster, Scorch, and Spitfire for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about harvest safety, the most important topic that we could possibly discuss this time of year. Being safe in your fields, being safe around the equipment and the bin site, being safe on the roads. There are just so many areas where we've got to be really, really careful this time of year. Real happy to have Cheryl Skolas on with us right now, University of Wisconsin. Cheryl, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Glad to have the opportunity.
Okay, so there are just so many areas here where farmers really need to be careful this time of year, but not just farmers, all the people around as well. Where do you start with this discussion?
You know, it's always a point of where to discuss. So I'm going to go to the one that I see as a priority, and that's when you're working with this machinery, you're working with the equipment. If you need to stop and do something, the power is turned off. You know, we see entanglements. We see, you know, really severe injuries. So if that power is off, that residual energy is left out, that machine cannot entangle you. It can't cut you. It's not going to chop you up. You're not going to get engulfed in the grain. So when you need to repair, you know, turn that power off.
You know, it sounds really easy, but it just takes an extra minute, Cheryl. And a lot of times everybody's trying to save that couple of minutes that being safe really only takes just a couple minutes in most cases. You're right. And also, when you think about working around equipment, one of the things that we talk about a lot is grain bins and making sure you have somebody else around if you're going to be going into those bins. For many farm operations, though, they might be one-person shows. One man or one woman is running everything, and that can be a little bit of a challenge, too. So in those cases, how do you advise them to work around some of this equipment where it would be sure nice to have another person?
You know, is there any possibility first that there's not somebody that you can ask and get that additional help would be my first choice. The second thing is to have a communications plan, you know, so when does somebody expect you home and what to do if you're not showing up at that time? You know, taking those safety precautions that we just talked about, you know, having the power off and not shortchanging safety to start with if you have to go along. There's some, you know, we might think we got our cell phone along, but, you know, if we can't reach that cell phone, we can't use it because something happened, that cell phone is not going to be our emergency backup plan. So there are some other lone worker devices out there, might be worth exploring to see, you know, something like an avalanche kind of alarm that if you don't move, that it triggers off. But, you know, working so that other people know where you're working, when to check on you, when to expect you, you know, in those lone worker situations.
You know, one thing I think too, Cheryl, is we get working such long hours at harvest. And I know a lot of our neighbors talk about this too, that it's late, it's dark, the day length is getting a little shorter for us. That does definitely add to some of the safety risks that we face.
It certainly does. And, you know, being here as the weather is changing in Wisconsin and the cold setting in, you know, we do. And, you know, one of the things, if we need to be out there, what can we do to increase the lighting that's around us? You know, can we improve that vehicle lighting? Can we add more lights around our bins in our work area so that, you know, we make it more visible? And, you know, asking ourselves, you know, truthfully, do we need to be going that long? Can we give ourselves that added break so we come into the next day, you know, more rested? You know, we hear that message through the years of we got to get her done, and we feel that pressure of the weather. But, it, you know, in reality, you know, can you save that next load till, you know, tomorrow and give yourself that break?
Talking with Cheryl Skolas with the University of Wisconsin. Cheryl, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Thanks for your advice, and good luck to everybody in Wisconsin this harvest season.
Thank you. Good luck to all your listeners.
Bet. Thank you very much. Let's head up to Manitoba. We've got Rob Gobay with us right now. Rob, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate having you on.
Oh, thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
I know we were talking about some of these issues, and Cheryl was just on talking about things happening in Wisconsin and beyond. A lot of the same issues in Manitoba that we're facing here. Temperatures getting colder, day length getting a little bit shorter, and we got a lot of work to do out in those fields.
Oh, that's for sure. I know locally the guys have been going full bore and trying to get the crops off the field, but a lot of them still have a ways to go yet.
So you work with the Canadian Ag Safety Association. What are some of the big topics going on right now in Canada in terms of farm safety?
Well, one of our main projects that we have on the go right now is what we call our Be Grain Safe program, where we just focus on grain safety, working in and around grain. A lot of producers and people just don't realize some of the dangers of working in and around grain. So we've created an awareness program to provide a little bit more awareness and hopefully provide some safety for folks out there.
I know I talk to farmers that say, oh, you know, I've heard a lot about that before, but yet there are accidents every year and too many of them. I mean, one is too many, but there's a lot more than one. So what are some of the things you find that farmers say, you know what, that is something I haven't taken serious, or that's something I didn't realize?
Well, getting back to the grain safety, a big focus is grain entrapment and prevention of grain entrapments. So we have a mobile unit that we go out to different trade shows and do some demonstrations. And one of the demonstrations is sinking a mannequin, life-size mannequin, in flowing grain. And a lot of people, even experienced producers, don't realize how quickly someone can get trapped in flowing grain. So that's kind of one of the main comments I get at these trade shows.
Yeah, I know, talking to farmers who have been fortunate enough to be rescued out of those situations, that's probably the number one comment they make is, we can't believe how fast it happened. It just was a split second, and all of a sudden we were in big trouble. Grain safety, definitely a big, big deal. When you think about road safety in Manitoba, is this a big concern? Are communities spread out and people understand, hey, there's going to be farm equipment that may have to be on the roads for a ways to get from field to field?
It depends on the area, to be honest, in my opinion. You know, these agricultural communities where it's a lot of local traffic, I think most of those folks driving behind the wheel are aware that there might be agricultural slow-moving equipment out on the road at this time of year. But, you know, the closer we get to the urban areas, the less likely people are aware of that potential. And just the lay of the land out near Winnipeg here, just outside the city, we have a lot of agricultural areas and a lot of equipment going down what could be the highway as well. So it's surprising how quickly we approach on a slow-moving vehicle at highway speed. So it's an ongoing concern. But again, I think it depends on what area you live in.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've flown into Winnipeg a number of times, and it turns from urban to rural really quick. And I can see if somebody was heading in or out of town, they might come upon farm areas a lot faster than they're expecting. We're talking with Rob Gobay up in Winnipeg with the Canadian Agricultural Safety Association. Rob, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today, and good luck, and stay safe to everyone in Canada.
Right on. Thanks a lot for calling me. It was great being on the show.
You bet. We're talking about farm safety and harvest safety on our show today, and we're taking calls and questions throughout the show, too. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can email us as well, radio@agphd.com, or you can find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
I'll take predictability where I can get it.
With their CropWise Seed Selector, NK Seeds combines local knowledge and local data to show me where their seed fits.
And even where it doesn't. Because out here, predictability is hard to come by. And success matters. Find your seed at nkseeds.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
Pentair Hypro 3D nozzles are your premier choice for fungicide applications. Syngenta fungicide application field trials have shown Hypro 3D nozzles provide a yield advantage of up to 10% over other nozzles, maximizing the return on your fungicide investment. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the Endzone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio today, and this may be the most important show that we do all year. We're talking about harvest safety. Just slow down a little bit and make sure that everybody's okay. It's a very busy time of year. It's a stressful time of year, a lot of hours. And sometimes we're running machines that we haven't run very often either. I know there's a lot of new folks out there that we've heard from that, hey, this is my first harvest, or I've just been doing this for a couple of years, or we're raising a new crop or trying a new machine. Just be careful. Take your time. Make sure everybody makes it home safe. Happy to have Dee Jespin on right now with Ohio State University Extension. Dee, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. This is a very important topic.
I completely agree. One of the things that I think about just every day as I'm heading down the road this time of year and in the spring too, there is a lot of farm traffic where we're at. And for some folks, they aren't used to seeing that. What should they expect? What are some things to watch out for out on the roads?
As far as a motorist concerns, you mean, or
yes,
as far as a farmer's side?
Oh, good point. Good point. Okay. Talk through each situation.
Right. Well, we know daylight savings time is coming too, and that always, kind of catches the motoring public off guard. It catches our farm crew off guard too, because what they were putting in long days, now they're moving equipment and have to take care of rush hour traffic in the dark, so to speak, with those motorists. So making sure the SMB emblem is on the most furthest back implement that you have, if you're towing multiple wagons. That SMV sign is your legal right to be on the road and being, as a farmer, moving slowly on the road, and that will save you in a courtroom too. Just letting them know that that SMV is, that it's visible. You've dusted it off, so you know it's very visible and available for them. That's my best recommendation, because farmers have the exact right to be on the road as the motoring public. And so it's, how do we share the roads safely?
Absolutely. You mentioned pulling wagons or pulling trailers behind too. And I know sometimes we get in a rush and maybe we don't have the right hookups, or maybe we haven't checked all the lighting. And that is so critical to make sure everything's working. I know on the weekend, if we're pulling a boat or a camper, we've got to check all those things out. And we certainly do with all the farm equipment we're pulling as well.
Yeah, the lighting and marking is very important. So even if you have your semis and they might have some extra tape on the side so that they're visible, just checking every single thing, everything from your grain buggy. If it goes on the road, it should definitely have lights and working lights and an SMV emblem, sure.
We're talking with Dee Jespin with Ohio State University. Okay, that's the farmer side of things. We got to make sure we're doing things right. And for motorists heading down the road, we got to watch for those things, watch for big equipment that may extend past the lane just a little bit. What are some other farm safety things that you're talking about here at harvest time?
Well, we always talk about machine maintenance. It just doesn't end. It goes from pre-harvest all the way through harvest. As you're working on equipment, making sure you turn everything off before you actually engage with whatever you are working on, whether it's in the farm shop, whether it's in the grain bin, or it's on a piece of equipment. You want to make sure that that engine, that motor, that electrical circuitry is all shut down before you enter the workspace. And then after we're finished, to make sure we put those shields and guards back on. I know we're always running in a hurry. Time is of the essence. We'll put it back on later, or I just want to run it a few times before I put the shields and guards back on. And that's sometimes the mistake that most people make is, well, it was only going to be off. The shields would be off just for a half of a day or one round of, maintenance.
You bring up a good point there, Dee. I already talked to a farmer this fall who said, man, that safety shield just saved my life. And you're right. It doesn't take just a second to having stuff off and taking that extra risk. It's just not worth it. The other thing that I've heard this fall is in some of the dry areas, and our farm would be included, make sure you've got a fire extinguisher out there with those combines and with other equipment. If you're in an area that's super dry and there's a fire risk, you can prevent a lot of those problems if you catch them early and are prepared.
Yeah, a good 10-pound ABC multi-purpose fire extinguisher would be your friend this season. That is for sure. And put one in the combine, put one in the tractor, put one in the pickup, or maybe the grain cart, the semi that's sitting in the field. Because nothing's worse than having to run halfway across the field to go get the extinguisher. So just making that upfront investment, they last for a long time, and you can get them recharged every season. So if you happen to have some in the shop that you would like to, get them recharged and put them in your pickup trucks or put them in those vehicles, that way they're where you need them, and you don't have to send somebody back to a shop. It's a good idea just to invest in a few. I always say, we have a birthday every year, put a few of these items on your birthday list. And people love to buy you stuff like that.
Absolutely. Well, and I hope you never need it. I really hope you never need it. But even the one that's been sitting around for a while, like you mentioned, just getting those fire extinguishers tested on a regular basis to make sure that they're in working order. And it is kind of fun, actually, just as a training to shoot those fire extinguishers off. We used to do that too. Even in our high school ag class, we would have one day a year that we would practice fire safety, and we would take an old fire extinguisher that needed to get recharged anyway and shoot it off just so we were used to, here's how it works, here's how you do it, here's how you come into the fire and so forth. Yeah, there's so many good tips to keeping farmers safe this harvest season. Been talking with Dee Jespin with Ohio State University. Dee, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hey, one thing I was going to mention quick, Darren, as you guys were talking about fire extinguishers there, Fire extinguishers sometimes are not enough. We have had a number of combine fires this fall because it's been drier than it's ever been in any fall in my lifetime. And we've also had, like today, they're saying 40, 45 mile an hour winds. So that really that makes it easy for massive fires to get started very quickly. And I mean, we've been paying attention to this. We just took our normal water truck we have for our sprayer, and we have the tank all filled up with water, and we literally have that sitting out in the field. So if we need to, we can put something out very, very quickly with an incredible amount of water, because the fire extinguisher and one fire extinguisher hasn't quite done it this year. All right. You ready to jump back to the Ag PhD mailbag? All right, here's my favorite question in a while. This one comes from Jason. He says, I would sure like to know what fairy tale land $2 insecticide is found in, because we often here on the show talk about $2 insecticide. Jason, that's very common. You should be paying $2, maybe just a little bit less, for a pyrethroid, one of the Lambda products. That'd be like Warrior, Asana, all the different generics that are out there. So yeah, and that's the full rate. You're talking $2 or less. So that is, it makes spraying insecticide, makes spraying to control insects so much more likely that you are going to get a good return on investment. I mean, when insecticide used to cost $8, then you go, I don't know if I can justify that. But man, when it's two and you're already out there spraying something else, then it goes pretty easy. All right, next one. And we got two questions here that are almost the same. One from Ray, one from Travis, asking about Dallas grass control in Bermuda grass pasture. Probably the best thing that I would suggest would be Tribute Total. That's a combination of three different ALS herbicides, the active ingredients found in Varro, Permit, and Revolver. So again, it's Tribute Total. That's probably what I would use in that case. The other thing that we always talk about is just overall pasture management. We really like seeing rotational grazing. That's going to help get you more total grass tonnage each year. Making sure that you don't overgraze it so everything gets down super low. You've got to make sure that it's properly fertilized as well. And the whole point here is just we want your grass to do as good as it possibly can, because the better your grass does, the better chance it has to choke out all weeds, whether it's a broadleaf weed or another grass weed like Dallas grass.
Thanks for those questions. We'll get back into the Ag PhD mailbag right after this. Stay tuned.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgrow brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgrow leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shutter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the Endzone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Resistant weeds got you down? Knock out tough-to-kill herbicide-resistant weeds like Palmer Amaranth and Water Hemp with Tough 5EC. Manufactured by Beltrim Crop Protection, Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of actively growing broadleaf weeds. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix for enhanced control with no concerns about residual or carryover injury. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Together, we can get tough on weeds. Always read and follow label instructions.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology, or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expected soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved. And no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We've been talking about harvest safety, also digging into the Ag PhD mailbag with a number of agronomic questions here too. And we'll continue to do so. Our phone lines are open also at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head out to Illinois. We've got John on the line with us right now. John, how are you doing?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Good, good. How's harvest going in your area?
We're plugging along. We're plugging along, and it's already got me thinking about next year, as a matter of fact.
Perfect.
I forgive me for asking this question, but I'm here in Illinois, and this part of the world, people really don't grow sorghum very much, and we've got an elevator that's trying to get people to grow it. And I was just curious on your guys' opinion on sorghum, because on the row spacing, I've been doing some research on it, and some people say you should go with 30 inches, and some people say you should go with narrow spacing. But I'm kind of viewing it like I would almost a corn crop, and I really like to put late season nitrogen on it. I know it takes roughly half the amount of nitrogen that you would get for corn. And I just kind of would like your opinion on what you think would be a decent plan to try to make this thing pencil out and see if it would work.
Okay, and I assume we're talking grain sorghum here, correct?
Grain sorghum, yeah.
Yeah, all right. So I'll just tell you, on our farm, we're not a big grain sorghum producer or milo producer. We're actually raising 15 acres this year, because last year I had, so Darren and I and one other grower did some over at our Ag PhD field day. And mine went 173, Darren's went 170, and this other farmer's went 167. And those are high yields for grain sorghum in this part of the country. So I said, well, let's raise like 15 acres and we'll go in for the national yield contest for this whole area of the country. And then they changed the rules on us that we had to have more acres. So anyway, I don't know. We're going to harvest here in the next couple of days. But all I know is last year, mine was 15-inch rows and I was at 173. Darren's were 30-inch rows at 170 and a half. So,
okay.
And we've got some this year at 15 inch and some this year at 30 inch. The advantage always to narrow rows is going to be you're going to get faster crop canopy, which means a little bit better weed control, and you're preserving a little more moisture. So in Illinois, the moisture thing, probably not a super big deal. But, you know, for us out here, it's a little bit of a thing. But anyway, in terms of the fertility side, the biggest thing we would say is just make sure you've got your soil well-balanced. So we're looking at good levels of P and K and sulfur and all the micronutrients, just like we would for corn or beans for the most part. I mean, the biggest thing with sorghum, like you said, it does need some nitrogen, maybe not as much as what corn needs, but you're still going to have to actually apply some nitrogen out there. So, I mean, what specifically else would you like to know in terms of fertility or any other questions you would have on sorghum?
Well, I guess also in regards to chemical plan. I mean, it sounds to me like you could put roughly the same things that you would for corn, for non-GMO corn, that you would for sorghum for the most part.
But I
know that after my research, and please forgive me for the guys down in Kansas and everywhere else that's growing it, you know, it just seems to be that people want to grow this because it's a droughty type of crop, and I have very low cation exchange capacity soil here. It's around 8, you know, so that certainly is a benefit to me.
Yes.
Because I can't put a lot of nitrogen on. But I was just thinking, well, are they really, is this the type of crop where you would see a difference if you had some later season application of nitrogen like you would with corn, or is that just kind of overkill?
No, I mean, it's very much like corn in that respect, and especially with that light ground that you're talking about, to think that there's going to be enough nitrogen to hold the entire season in Illinois with the rainfall that you get, I would seriously doubt that. So, in other words, what I'm saying is, whether it's corn or soybeans, I would split apply my nitrogen. Now, where we farm and we get so little rain and our soil is so heavy, I can probably put all my nitrogen out up front for the sorghum. But that would not be the case for you. I would not recommend that for you. In terms of controlling weeds, we have some good options, fairly similar, like you said, to conventional corn, but not exact. So just first of all, I really like Outlook or Verdict. Verdict has Outlook plus Sharpen, and Sharpen's fantastic on broadleaves. A lot of times the sorghum guys are dealing with kochia, and Sharpen is fantastic on kochia pre-emerge. Post-emerge, you can use Husky. You can't use Husky in corn, but you can use it in sorghum. So Husky is I mean, we usually talk about that in wheat. So I like that because it's an HPPD, and it also gives you some Buctrol in there. So that is what we talk about quite often in grain sorghum. But I mean, yeah, you've got a few options. You could run with a low rate of dicamba, half a pint of Banvel or something like that if you wanted to do that instead. So you certainly have some choices, but I would start with a good pre, follow up with something post, and weeds shouldn't be a big problem in sorghum.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I appreciate the feedback. And one last thing is I assume we would be better off putting it after beans than we would after corn.
Well, most likely, yes. I mean, it's nice to rotate a broadleaf crop, soybeans, with a grass crop, sorghum, or corn. When you start going grass crop followed by grass crop, you are more likely to have disease issues. But, you know, there certainly are farmers who will follow corn with sorghum or vice versa. But, yeah, I mean, our preference would be go soybeans, then go grain sorghum.
Okay. Well, Brian, thank you very much for your advice. And, Darren, thank you as well.
You bet. Yeah. Thanks for the call today. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks.
Yep. Bye-bye.
All right. Got a question from Jeff up in Michigan. And Jeff said, how do you get rid of pigweeds? They seem to keep coming back in the same places year after year. Even when you mow them off, they come back in those areas too. What can I do?
Well, what crop are we talking about? What's the situation?
Well, that's a great question because Jeff doesn't mention which crop. So let's talk about a couple different situations. Let's say out in cultivated fields, what do you do? And then what do you do like in a grass, lawn, farmyard kind of situation too?
Okay. So I'll give you my best recommendations. We talk about this very often in soybeans. That's the number one area where we have an issue. You want to start with the three pre's, use a yellow, either Prowl or Trifluralin, plus Metribuzin, plus a PPO, which is either Valor or Authority. Early post, then you come in with like Flexstar and a Group 15. Group 15s would be Outlook, Dual, Zidua, Warrant, those kind of things. So also, you could use, if you wanted, Anthem Max. That's going to have Zidua, like I just mentioned, the Group 15, and it's going to have Cadet, which is very similar, same chemical family as Flexstar. So you certainly could do that. Then it's really nice later on if you have the option to spray 2,4-D in Enlist, Dicamba in Xtend Beans, or Liberty over Xtend Flex that just got labeled. We should talk about that. Well, I'll get to that in 1 second. Or Enlist or LLGT27 or Liberty Link Beans. I mean, you got lots of options there in beans, but you've got to start with the pre. That's our suggestion. I mentioned Xtend Flex Beans. Those did get approved in Europe. So in the United States, we are going to be able to plant those this spring, it appears. And I believe that dicamba will be labeled. I don't know what the label is going to look like, but at the moment, dicamba is not labeled for anything, either Xtend or Xtend Flex, yet for 2021. So we'll see what that looks like. I would tell you XtendFlex is going to be very short in supply, so order it soon if you want any. Okay, in corn, I'd start, if it was me, I'd start with Verdict. I'd follow post-emerge with an HPPD plus atrazine or status plus atrazine, something like that. It's pretty easy to get pigweed control in corn. In lawns, I'm just spraying 2,4-D, and then I'm not mowing the lawn so short. And I'll spray 2,4-D as often
and
as I have to.
Using fertilizer, so you get grass that's growing very well.
Just like we talked about in the pastures.
Because we're looking at annual weeds here. Pigweeds are annual weeds. And if you don't let them go to seed, eventually, after a few years, the seeds that are in the soil are going to be done coming. But the problem is, if you let one plant go to seed, it can have a million seeds on it in some cases, or even more. So you're going to have a lot of seeds to fight out there for the next 3 to 10 years for sure. So, yep, there's going to be more weeds that come next year, but eventually you will get ahead of it. Thanks for the question, Jeff. We really appreciate that. We'll dive into more Ag PhD mailbag questions right after this.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree. In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, and we're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, taking your calls and agronomic questions throughout the rest of the show at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. That's exactly what Matt did. He said, I'm sending you an email here from central North Dakota. I did some grid soil sampling last fall and found my pH at 5.7 and my calcium base saturation percentage at 55 to 60. So both of them were lower than I would like. Our ground seems very hard with very few earthworms out there, and we plan on liming it this fall to both increase our pH and increase our calcium-based saturation percentage. I'm wondering if you think we should try to rip the soil to incorporate the lime and loosen the soil up in the short term. Any thoughts on a reduced rate of Pell lime versus granulated sugar beet lime? What would you suggest?
Well, here's the thing. With Pell lime, it's expensive. And
And you aren't going to really increase that calcium-based saturation much.
Nope, you aren't. So the beet lime typically is very inexpensive. And it also has a bunch of other nutrients in there, like phosphorus. Beet lime is usually loaded with phosphorus. So I really like that. If I have that available, it's near me, I'm going that direction. Number one thing I would say is don't overdo that lime. Just get your pH to 6.3. That's all you need to do for corn, soybeans, and wheat. Now, if you're going to be an alfalfa producer, that's a little different story. Now you got to be up near 7 for pH. But just don't overdo it. We have done too much of that. The other thing that I always tell people is do 1-acre grids before you lime. And you might say, oh my gosh, Brian, how much money am I going to spend? Look, I'll just tell you from firsthand experience how we screwed it up and cost ourselves literally hundreds of dollars per acre. It costs $16 an acre to do 1-acre grids. So on the Ag PhD Soils app, you can go to that, and basically it's discounted soil testing. I mean, you run the test through Midwest Labs, it's heavily discounted for volume when you go to 1-acre grids. $16 an acre. We're doing that right now on our farm. But here's the reason why you want to do it. Because if you've got some spots that aren't 5-7, they're 6-7 right now, and you throw a bunch of lime on it, what's going to happen is you're going to end up with the pH in the 7s and your yield will go down. That happened to us, lost 20 or 30 bushels for multiple years. Just dumb. That was one of the dumbest things that we've ever done. So I'm trying to help you so you don't screw it up and you don't cuss yourself, because all I know is we spent money on lime, shouldn't have spent it on certain acres. I'm not saying in all acres. Spent money on lime we shouldn't have spent, lost yield, then we had to spend money on elemental sulfur to get the pH back down. So it was a spend, lose yield, spend. Now, does that sound good? No. So just spend the money and go to 1-acre grids before you lime. And I would say that to any farmer on the planet. Go to small grids or small zones, whatever you want to do. Do not go with big grids, and definitely do not do a composite sample before you lime. Because when it's a composite sample, you're just getting one sample across the whole field. You might have spots that are perfect on pH, and you might have spots that are really horrible on pH. So we want to make sure that we're addressing each acre according to its needs.
All right. Thanks for the questions, Matt. Good luck on this fall application. I think it'll take your farm in a better direction as well. Okay, get this from VS in Eastern Europe. He's over in Bulgaria. He said, I want to help our government make the right changes in choosing which practices would be worth promoting and subsidizing, like cover crops and no-till. Of course, because it's a government, they want official data from universities or scientists about specific benefits of no-till, like exactly how much carbon can be sequestered per acre per year, how much soil will you save, the effect of reducing inorganic fertilizers, pesticide use, etc. And also, how do you measure and control whether the farmers are doing the practice or they've already been doing it in the past? One more thing I'd like to mention, the only thing that I haven't heard more people talk about is the fact that trees attract rain. The more trees, and also other plants, but mostly trees, the more rain we have. We have lots of rain in the rainforests, no rain in the deserts. The big difference is trees. Therefore, I think windbreaks are essential.
All right, several things there. First of all, we talk about cover crops quite often here on the show. Let's keep in mind, a full season crop is also a cover crop. The reason why cover crops have gotten so much publicity is because there have been a lot of farmers that harvest in, let's call it September, and then there's growing season left till November in some areas, and you go, well, wait a second, we got 3 months here where there's nothing growing out in the field. There could, and in many cases should be, something growing out there to keep the biologicals going, to hold the soil down, that kind of thing. But the way I look at this cover crop deal is if we raise long enough day corn and soybeans, we are planting just as the ground thaws, and we are harvesting right before the ground freezes in the fall. There's no extra time. So we're accomplishing the same thing. But to your point about this tree, about the tree thing, I'm with you on the trees. Now, it's going to vary what type of tree you have, but let's just put it this way. If you walk out into a cornfield, for example, and so any farmer, any person that's ever walked into a cornfield, you notice right now, if it's a big cornfield, there is tremendous humidity there. All plants have this respiration-transpiration process where they're constantly kicking moisture into the air, pulling moisture out, kicking it out, pulling it back in, I should say. And so when that's going on and you have tremendous crop that's out there, then yes, you got a lot more humidity and there is a little bit more chance for rain. So I guess it all depends on what your goals are here with things, but in terms of where to look for good information, I don't know of anything. I have looked and looked. I can't find anybody's data on how much actual carbon you sequester. What I'm after is per bushel of grain that I'm producing. That's what I'd really like to know. Somebody needs to do a study on that, and I'd just talk to some universities on that and see what you find. So, I don't know exactly who to say to go to, but there is plenty of published work out there on cover crops and definitely on soil erosion.
Thank you very much, VS. Really appreciate the support. Thanks for the question, too. Get this one from Chris, who says, I've got a question about spraying poison ivy, poison oak around the farm and the hedgerows and the sides of the yards. I want to do that, but I don't want to kill the desirable trees. I didn't know what we could use besides Roundup or Crossbow or something like that. We've got hardwood trees that I want to be careful around.
Yes. So there, a lot of people will just try 2,4-D or dicamba. Now, I'm not a big fan of spraying dicamba around the farmyard. It's more dangerous. It's got benzene in it, so I don't like that. 2,4-D is quite safe. Now, I'm not saying you don't have to be careful with that, too. Okay, so use Freelix or Enlist One. That's the new 2,4-D, and it doesn't have all the drift. So you can go that way. But on poison ivy and poison oak, you've got to have a massive rate, and I mean the highest labeled rate. And even then, you're probably going to have to spray multiple times a year, and it's still not going to be 100% perfect. So what a lot of people have done in the past is use Remedy Ultra. Well, there's a product now called Vastland that doesn't have as much drift as what Remedy Ultra did. So I'd go with Vastland, but you'd have to keep that off your trees. The nice thing with Vastland, compared to like Tordon, Milestone, some of these products have just tremendous residual. And they're going to go down in the ground, and if there's a root there, they're going to kill that tree. So you got to be super careful with that. Whereas Vastland doesn't have all the soil residual, so it's basically gone just about as soon as it ends up in the ground. So you could do that, but you'd have to keep it away from the trees. So yeah, it's basically a combination of Vastland and 2,4-D would be my recommendation. And right. I'm saying Vastland away from the trees, 2,4-D near the trees. That's what I meant.
Okay, got a question from Eric. I see a new fungicide is getting labeled for next year, Dalaro Complete, another multi-mode of action product. Is this one that will be used in corn and soybeans and one we should consider?
I believe so. I haven't seen the label yet. I don't know if the label is actually out, but Dalaro Complete has got Proline in there, which is a fantastic triazole. We often talk about TopGuard and Proline as being the two best triazoles that we have seen in the past. Revitec, and I'm sure BSF is going to talk about their Revisol. That's new. I just don't have as much experience with it, but that looks good as well. But anyway, it's got the Proline in there. It's got Gem, and it's got an SDHI. The Gem is a strobe, similar to like Quadris, for example. So anyway, it's three modes of action. We really like three mode of action products. Trivapro's done good in the past. Revitec looks good right now. We've got this new Dalaro Complete. So having three modes of action is very nice because if you have resistance to one of those modes, at least you still have two effective modes left.
Yeah, we like those multiple mode of action products, whether it's herbicides, fungicides, whatever, just to spread our risk a little bit and have a better shot to doing a great job. Thanks for the question. Thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.